when I was a kid, the two churches in town I was most familiar with were the two churches I can ever remember attending growing up, starting out at the First United Methodist Church there in town for the first part of my childhood. And then as I got older, I'd say probably in my teenage years, I started going to the First Baptist Church on the other side of town. And while I wouldn't say either were mega churches by any means, both would certainly have fallen on the larger end of the scale, you know, with memberships in the several hundreds, with multiple worship services on a Sunday morning. Each had large choirs, big youth programs, busy men's and women's ministries. That they had active prison outreaches and campground and benevolence ministries and out-of-country missions trips and so forth. A lot of good stuff happening. And that's what I grew up with. And that's really all I ever knew. And then as I felt a call to ministry myself and as I ended up going to Bible college to learn to become a pastor, the first time I ever paid attention to the existence of any other kind of church was when the Bible department there sent us young aspiring ministry majors out on pulpit supply appointments to fill in, to fill the pulpit at other churches. And the kind of churches they sent us to weren't the large churches I was familiar with, but they sent us to small country churches, some out in the middle of nowhere, out in the middle of a corn or soybean field. And we're talking about your iconic little country church, you know, where the building is the sanctuary. In some of these churches, there was no large fellowship hall. There was no Sunday school wing. Some didn't even have a front foyer. It was just a little sanctuary with two little rows of pews, a room you could literally walk from one side to the other in 10 or 12 steps. And again, that was so foreign to me. And it's definitely not what I envisioned when I envisioned a future in ministry. And I'll be honest with you, some of those early pulpit supply appointments were downright depressing to me. I can remember preaching at one church, again, this was out in the middle of nowhere, where there were just four people in attendance. Just four. And during the course of my preaching, I noticed one guy on one side of the sanctuary fell asleep on me. And then another, maybe three-fourths through my sermon, he got up and he left. I don't know if he had to be somewhere or if my sermon was just that boring, but he left. That just left me with two people to preach to. And I'll be honest with you, that experience was so discouraging to me. And my initial reaction to it was, well, I understand the value for preachers to preach at small churches like this to get their feet wet, but I certainly wouldn't want to put down any ministry roots in a place like this after I've received my training. What a waste, right? What a waste of an educated minister's efforts. And I'm going to have more to say about that kind of thinking here in a little bit, but that's what I thought. And as I went on with my Bible training and as I continued making my pulpit supply rounds, I just assumed the end goal to it all was to end up at a more established church and ideally to be offered a full-time pastorate with a full-time salary. Ironically, though, the more I visited these small little churches and the more I studied my Bible, the more my attitude began to change. And I began to see past the chipped paint and the creaking floorboards at these old churches. And I really started paying attention to the old faithful saints there who rather than abandoning ship and going where all the excitement was happening at the big churches across town, these folks sought to persevere and to hold down the fort. Now, I've been around long enough to realize there are lots of different reasons churches are small and why those who attend them keep on attending them. I understand that it could be because it's just what they grew up with, and so it's what they're used to, and it's what they're comfortable going on doing, or it's because they they don't particularly like large crowds and they actually prefer to stay small, or maybe it's because they'd rather avoid some of the modern aspects they see in larger churches. Maybe they prefer the old country hymns or the traditional styles of worship. Maybe they have some kind of family stake in the church where their parents or their grandparents started the church, and they're just committed to sticking around and keeping it alive. I know there are probably several other reasons out there, but as I surprisingly started feeling what was my own burden for these smaller churches, I don't think that my reasons were any of those. But as I've reflected on it, and as I've thought about what changed in my own thinking, I think I'd sum it up with the following. Perhaps the first reason I have developed a heart for small churches is precisely because of the importance I see in having larger, growing churches. That is to say, I have a heart for small churches because my desire would be that they not forever remain small churches. That's not to say that I think a small church is any less of a church because of its size, because quite honestly, I could point to a few mega churches out there that I would hesitate to even call a church because of their false teaching or their cult-like behaviors that they practice. Size doesn't legitimize a church. And yet we know what God's will is for his churches, and church growth is certainly on his list. Even though when the Bible talks about church growth, we know its primary emphasis isn't numerical growth, but spiritual growth. Ephesians 4, verses 11 through 13 is pretty clear. And he gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for the building up of the body of Christ. And what kind of building up is that? Well, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So the primary kind of church growth we're talking about is a growth in Christ-likeness. A church is growing whether or not it's taking on new members if it is becoming more like Jesus. But of course, we also know that part of becoming more like Jesus is reaching and discipling people, which should naturally result in some numerical growth. Hence the example of Acts, and the Lord added to their number day by day those being saved. And so what I desire to see and what I want to help support to whatever degree I can is the reach of those smaller church communities by encouraging more hands on deck to bolster and assist that core of disciples to be the hands and the feet of Christ. Unfortunately, I think the habit or the instinct of a lot of good and godly Christians out there is to just drive past the small churches in their community in order to put their gifting to use where all the action is already happening, rather than considering the impact that their gifting could make where there isn't yet a lot of action happening, but there could be if only they and ideally a few others with them invested their energies where their energies could really be used. I have a heart for small churches because of the obvious help small churches need to do the work that they need to do in order to grow. Another reason I have a heart for small churches, particularly those in your more rural or small town, outskirt-like communities, is because the Great Commission includes rural, small town, outskirt-like communities. I remember hearing a church planter say one time that the model of the New Testament when it comes to church ministry and missions, and therefore he was saying the apparent priority and strategy the faithful Christian should invest their attention in is primarily in urban ministry. Because where did the Apostle Paul go on his mission, on his missionary journeys? Well, he largely focused on the cities. He focused on places like Ephesus and Corinth and Athens, and he made it his ambition to go to Rome, right? Yes, I agree. The urban centers were a big focus in Paul's ministry. But guess what? Rural areas were part of his work too. One author I read says, it is a significant overstatement to say that Paul's passion was the planting of churches in metropolitan centers or in the, quote, strategic cities of the Roman Empire. He goes on to talk about how if you read the book of Acts as a whole, you find Paul not only preached in the big cities, but you find him faithfully serving in the rural backwoods areas as well. I mean, just track his movements in Cyprus. See where he goes in Galatia. It's not all port cities and capitals. Not to mention the example Jesus gives us in his ministry work. Where does Jesus spend much of his time? Yes, Jesus spends some time in Jerusalem. He spends some time in Capernaum. But for the most part, Jesus is out in the countryside of Galilee, interacting with the common folk. My point isn't to pit urban ministry versus rural ministry, but simply to say the Great Commission includes both. When the master tells his servants in the parable of the great banquet in Luke 14, go out to the highways and the hedges and compel people to come in, you know what that's talking about? That's literally talking about those winding roads common in first century times that cut through a farmer's crops in order to connect with some more public thoroughfare. So literally, we're talking about those paths out in the middle of a cornfield. The point is, my heart is to see not only those in the inner city or in some fast-growing suburban area come to Christ. I do want to see that. But hey, I also want to see it happening in the boondocks too. The Great Commission includes both. A third reason I have a heart for small churches is because I know that God is just as present in small churches than he is in big churches. Matthew chapter 18, verse 20 says, "For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them." The truth is, it doesn't take a talented worship team or 60-person choir or orchestra ensemble or professionally trained worship leader to facilitate real Christian worship in a gospel church. Sure, those things are wonderful additions to worship. I personally love being in churches that have them. But they aren't fundamentally required elements in order for worship to happen. I mean, I admit, one of the neatest scenes of worship described in the Old Testament is when Asaph and all the other trained musicians are brought to the temple to worship the Lord in 1 Chronicles 15 and 16. And no doubt the impression that we're left with there is just how glorifying and honoring such organized and well-performed worship is to the Lord. But remember what Jesus told the woman at the well in John chapter 4. After she raises the question of which is better, to worship on the mountain in Samaria or to worship at the temple in Jerusalem. I mean, doesn't everybody say the temple is the best place to worship, right? Where all the special elements of worship are. What does Jesus say? He says, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. The hour is coming and is now here when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such people to worship him." Point being, worship can happen anywhere. It isn't tied to one place, especially not to one place that appears particularly equipped for worship. No, real worship can happen in Jerusalem. It can happen in Samaria. It can happen in the small synagogues out in the country just as much as it can happen in the large facilities of the temple. For that matter, you don't even need to have a small synagogue, which technically would require a minimum of 10 adult males to hold a service. According to Jewish tradition, Jesus says where two or three are gathered, you can worship corporately. The Lord is present there. A fourth reason I have a heart for small churches, and I'll end with this one, though I really could keep going, is because small flocks need shepherds too. Paul wrote to Titus in Titus chapter 1, verse 5, "This is why I left you in Crete, so that you might put what remained in order and appoint elders in every town as I directed you." Think about that statement. Appoint elders. What are elders? Elders are pastors. Appoint them in every town, even small towns, even in those little towns that have a total population of 42. Yes, appoint elders in every town. I already shared the story of how I used to think about small churches when I first started studying to become a pastor, but here's what I've also discovered over the years. I was hardly alone in my ministry bias against small churches. I've interacted with different seminary students and fellow pastors since that time who more often than not tell me that they won't even consider serving at a small church, either because they say they have to support their family and they require a full-time position, which obviously only a larger church can provide. I guess the bivocational example of Paul as a tent maker isn't something they're willing to consider for themselves. Or they'll say, having been to seminary, their level of education overqualifies them for a smaller church, or that their gifting would evidently be better suited in a big church. They are overqualified to serve in a congregation that doesn't meet whatever minimum threshold of members they think is worth their time. I'm so grateful for educated pastors who are well-equipped to feed the flock. But listen, when Paul told Titus to appoint elders in every town, his qualifications list applied across the board. And interestingly, if you read the qualifications he provides, it doesn't seem to mention masters of divinity degrees or doctorates, but a character of godliness and a faithfulness to uphold the plain message of the gospel as it's been given to us. I think the attitude of a lot of pastors out there is to treat smaller churches simply as training ground or as a stepping stone to get to a higher rung on the ministry ladder. In fact, I know one pastor in particular who has served in something like 7 different churches, each church being a little larger and providing a slightly bigger salary package than the one before. And what's the result of that? Well, one of the results of that is that the smaller churches, the lower rungs on the ladder, so to speak, can hardly hold on to any of their pastors for longer than a year or two before that pastor moves on to something bigger and better. I understand sometimes the church can't hold on to their pastors because they have a habit of running off their pastors, and that's a different topic altogether, but I know a lot of pastors want a big audience, and so they're always chasing after that bigger audience. And on that note, I love the advice of an older pastor writing to one of his younger students recently ordained over a small congregation who's somewhat discouraged about the small size of his church. The wiser older pastor writes to him saying, "I know the vanity of your heart and that you will feel mortified that your congregation is very small in comparison with those of your brethren around you. But assure yourself on the word of an old man that when you come to give an account of them to the Lord Christ at his judgment seat, you will think you have had enough. That is sound advice. Pastors will give an account for the souls under their care, Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17. And while we want to see our congregations grow and we desire to see an increasing number of sheep in the fold, the weight of responsibility that rests on our shoulders, even with a small flock, will prove heavy enough when we answer to Christ on Judgment Day. Well, again, I could keep going, but to wrap this up, I want to give some encouragement to those watching. If you are a layperson in the church, and maybe even searching for a new church home, don't rule out the smaller churches just because they're small and because they don't have all the fancy amenities that the big church down the road has. Consider the impact your attendance, your involvement, your gifting could make in a smaller church setting. If a smaller church environment just doesn't feel like church in your experience, look at the New Testament. Look at the small house churches that started out there without big youth groups or singles ministries or Mother's Day out programs, as beneficial as some of those things can be. The New Testament church didn't have those things. It was just a family of believers who had all things in common, Acts chapter 2. Or if you're an aspiring pastor out there and you're gearing up to serve in a church, don't assume that bigger churches are necessarily a more God-glorifying place to be. It's not the size of your ministry that validates the minister. It's your faithfulness in ministry. If God puts you in a big church, wonderful, be faithful in that. But if God puts you in a small church, that's also wonderful. Just be faithful. Be faithful. Be content. Serve the Lord. Well, I have a heart for small churches. I have a desire to see others have a heart for small churches too. Ultimately, to see the body of Christ built up. I hope this video has been helpful. Like, subscribe to our channel for more videos to come. Until then, God bless, and thanks for watching.